Belt shareholder activist. Hello.
Hi, Lindy.
Surprised?
Oh, I am a bit, yeah. Although I think Australians were never really going to take to coffee by American chain. So the McDonaldization of coffee was, I think, you know, you wouldn't think it would work well in France either. Maybe the UK, where they don't do any coffee. But I think Australians like their, you know, they're well made. The Italians and Greeks who've done good coffee here for a long time. The idea the Americans come in and tell us how to do coffee to sort of...
But they went mad in the beginning. Everyone was going there. And maybe they just decided they wouldn't keep going. Because a number of them, what are they keeping? 23 stores are opening in Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney and surrounding areas. But Canberra, Gold Coast, South Australia, Tassie are going to close their stores.
Yeah, which is a pretty huge blow. I mean, to close 75% of your stores and boot 600 jobs off, I mean, it's you may as well have just pulled out of the country. I mean, it's keeping a really negligible
presence for a
global American brand. You're either here or you're not, and now they're sort of, well, got toe in the water and that's it.
I wonder if it's all sad. Rochelle Hunt is actually outside of Starbucks this afternoon. Hi, Rochelle.
Oh, Lindy, I found myself a couple of Starbucks addicts that have just come up to me and said, please don't tell me, is it true what I've heard? Guys, how many times a day do you head down here for your Starbucks coffee?
Sometimes once, sometimes twice, but not every day, at least once a day.
Now, what do you normally drink? Are you a Frappuccino boy?
No, I'm a caramel latte boy.
What about yourself?
And a vanilla latte.
Does anyone actually just drink coffee in Starbucks?
I don't think so. The flavours are pretty good.
Lindy and Stephen, I'm starting to think that maybe part of the problem with Starbucks is that everybody's got their strawberry or their iced tea or their green tea frappuccino, and there's not actually enough coffee being consumed in these stores.
So they're not making enough money out of it. I wonder why. I wonder if there's a reason. Is there anything going on inside this shop? Does it look like it's going to be shut down as you stand there?
No, it's pretty dark, and it's been dark most of the day. There's a sign out the front that's been blue-tacked up in a very classy fashion that says we'll be closing the store at 2 p.m. today for a store meeting, and we apologise for any inconvenience. And pretty much every second person that's walked past here on Bourke Street has walked up to the door, sort of pushed the door, stood back, and then had this look of, oh, no!
Which is what I always do whenever I see something's closed. I always try and push my way in. Well, there is a chance that one could still open again because, as Stephen and I were saying, 20-odd stores around Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane will remain open. So to those who are standing near you crying.
Yeah, they might be. Boys, you might be all right. This store may stay open. So, your caramel latte.
Yeah.
I think you need to drink men's coffee, though. Come on, they're a bit girly, those coffees.
No sugar, though.
No sugar.
Do a caramel latte without sugar. I mean, it just defeats the purpose. Thanks,
Moment
Rochelle.
On the lips, lifetime on the hips.
Bye. Rochelle Hunt outside the other Starbucks in the city. There's probably a couple of them. And some smiley people. Why would you pick the three major cities? Obviously, they're making money there. That's the bottom line. But then those are the places where you have more option to get better coffee.
Well, the other thing is, like, why would you get out of the Gold Coast when, you know, all the American tourists would probably presumably like their Starbucks? So it is the whole thing has been an odd experiment. In terms of explaining, I mean, they're not closing any other countries. This is just an Australian...
Oh, I heard that they closed in the States.
No, well, there's this, you know, in their little spin doctor's effort here, it's saying this doesn't reflect other countries. There are no other international markets that need to be addressed in this manner.
Here we go. A month after the chain's US office announced the closure of 600 stores there, workers at Starbucks stores have confirmed that staff have been summoned to a meeting today. Now, that comes from the large paper here in Melbourne.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm. All right. Well, maybe it's a case of they're not doing it in any other international operations.
Right. But so at home
they're in trouble and they're just shafting their Australian business. Yeah, look, it's maybe it's the fact that I heard Alan Fells the other day saying that Australian rents are ridiculously high, that our landlords, compared to Europe and other places, rip off, it's often 20% of turnover is your rent. And so maybe a sort of a low-margin business like coffee has found that the exorbitant rents that we pay, relatively speaking, in Australia is too unprofitable.
They just don't make very good coffee.
I'd say that's probably more likely.
Have we thought of that as a possibility? Tamara, hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, good yellow tonight.
Thanks.
I got into trouble, Stephen, because, again, from good text message people of Melbourne, saying to me that I always used to comment on Hendo's ties or his shirt or how things were going and what people could look forward to in terms of colour that particular evening. And I never mentioned Tamara's clothing. And everyone saw that as some sort of sexist thing.
Discrimination.
Really? It is discrimination.
Backlash.
There's been a backlash. Yeah. So
being PC.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm happy to flirt outrageously with Hendo, but not with the good Tamara. So I'm trying to address that
so
right now.
So you're trying
now.
To address the wardrobe teaser.
Yes.
Interesting.
But the yellow's fine. Goes
Thank
well
you.
With the black. And
Thanks
I thought Stephen would
much.
Agree, wouldn't you, Stephen?
I do.
Yeah,
yes.
He's happy with that.
It's a bit controversial, the canary yellow, but anyway.
Oh God, go out there. It'll be terrific. Everyone will tune in now to see.
I hope so.
This evening I'm assuming that there's something about a Victoria Police.
Paul Mullett, Noel Ashby, Stephen Linnell.
Yes.
It's huge.
Charged.
They could be facing some pretty hefty sentences there. So, yes, we're starting with that tonight. There's a lot of news in Victoria today. Significant news, another Qantas mid-air incident, which happened last night. I actually know someone who was on that plane and he said it was very quiet while they were coming into land. The nursing home in Ballarat, the Kiralee Nursing Home, it's emerged that the Japara Group that manages that particular facility has 26 other homes around the state and interstate as well. So that's they're now going to be pretty heavily audited after a number of their residents allegedly were found malnourished and in quite a worrying state. Best pictures tonight, I would say. We've got a few stories about the Olympics and things are starting
smog?
To ramp up. Yeah, smog.
Still smoggy.
But also arrivals from the Australian team in Beijing. Some members of the Australian team, the Hockeyroos there are trying to acclimatise, they're embracing the pollution as part of their preparation. Well, as opposed to the swimmers who are in KL because they don't want to subject themselves to the
inside.
Air there. They say that KL's a better option for them because it's got the heat and humidity, but they don't have to chew the air. So
yeah, my memories of KL are smoggy enough on its own.
Mm.
Fair enough too. All right, bit of pictures coming in.
Yeah.
And the Chinese delegation still saying that they are going to have it as clear as a bell
by
next
Friday.
They are.
They're doing lots of cleaning up though. The authorities are racing to clear out any potential troublemakers. So they're rounding up people who look like they might protest and bussing them out of there.
People who look like Stephen. Well, it's tall,
exactly.
Stephen. That'd be very unusual in Beijing. Thank you, Tamara.
You're
Tamara
welcome.
O'Dine, ABC One this evening. At 7 o'clock, it's a quarter to six.
You may know me as Helen Razor, poorly spoken belle of the airwaves from 10 every Sunday. What you may not know, however, is that I've just turned 40!
You're so old.
What happens to a woman when the midlife crisis hits? Does she visit her neighbourhood cosmetic surgeon, lock away her push-up bra, or does she look long and hard into the mirror of her soul and wonder, where, oh where, did my youth go? Find out by logging on to Helen Razor's Midlife Crisis, abc.net.au/Melbourne.
Helen Razor.
So old.
Lindy Burns. Lindy Burns. On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, is with me. And Stephen, I know that you wanted to be a film reviewer in another life. You don't get a chance on this occasion because I've already got my 8 film reviewers for the Melbourne International Film Festival.
Well,
I asked people, lots of people put their entry in, to give me 50 words or less on the last film that they saw so we could see that they could do the job. This one from Jane, Mamma Mia the movie, Saturday night and the lights are low. Cold outside, it's the place to go. Mamma Mia, the movie. Its imperfections endeared it more, not less. The characters kitsch, the storyline a stretch, it didn't matter. The music and the brilliant cast made you feel like one of the guests. It's good, isn't it?
Very good.
And this one from Laura. Action films shouldn't invite too much laughter, but this one did, for all the wrong reasons. The casting was off, the narrative confusing, and the script utterly implausible. As they say, waste not, want not. Don't waste your time on Wanted. So to Jane Clark, to Laura Hamilton, to Joe Innes, to Greg Ralph, to Randall Berger, to Catherine Hogan, to Kate Herbert and to Lance Ross, you will be my 8 film reviewers for the Melbourne International Film Festival. I think we've got in touch with you and you are on your way, so congratulations. Not such a great time, though, for a couple of our biggest banks. So what the hell's going on, Stephen? And is it going to be addressed? Is it stopped? Will the others make similar sorts of announcements?
Firstly, I think seeing bank shares fall by, in some cases, 20% in 3 days is just stunning. And the 3-day wipeout after a couple of them went another 4% today is pushing $35 billion in value, which I think is unprecedented. We haven't seen such a wipeout. I mean, the overall big four banks are down just over $100 billion from their peak, and they've done $35 billion almost in 3 days. So I guess probably more starkly than ever before, the global credit crisis has hit Australia. Although there is an important distinction to make between the two big ones that have done all the wrong things by the headlines, NAB and ANZ. NAB has been a very naughty boy. And they've been playing around in the US mortgage market, putting $1 billion into these collateralized debt obligations, which ultimately are very, very dodgy mortgages, as it turns out. And they've dropped $1 billion. And not only that, not only were they playing in a sandpit they had no right to be in, but they had no idea that they had mud all over them. And they came out 9 weeks ago and said, we're going to drop $180 million or something. And they come out, on Friday and said, actually, it's another $830 million. So credibility through the floor. The CEO, John Stewart, who's a Scotsman who initially had a two-year contract where the last line of his contract announced to the stock exchange said that he could say one-way first-class flight back to the UK. So he was clearly telling the world that he was here for 2 years and he was going straight back on a one-way flight. It's now been almost 4 years, and I think that that one-way flight will be probably happening sooner rather than later. I think that the credibility of the bank and the CEO, Mr. Stewart, has been hit. The ANZ's problems are very different. They've just taken a very conservative, cross-the-board hit to bad debts. Few people realise that the ANZ is actually the biggest company or business in New Zealand. That they have a business in New Zealand that makes $1 billion a year on a revenue of $2.5 billion. They're bigger than Telecom New Zealand in New Zealand. And New Zealand's gone crashing into recession. And New Zealand is a mess. You don't want to be in New Zealand. And poor old ANZ is up to their eyeballs in New Zealand. So that's part of the reason they've taken a hit, plus just general being more prudent on overall bad debt provisions, plus they've had a few bad experiences with the Opus Prime and Shamira Capital and Bill Express. They haven't sort of been picking the quality clients, I think you'd say. So they've jacked up their provisions by a total of $1.6 billion in three goes at it.
So just explain to me then, in terms of the ANZ, it is dealings that they've done not necessarily with people who can't repay in terms of mortgages. We're not talking about homes. We're talking about lendings to business.
Yeah, I mean, there's corporate lending, particularly the property sectors in a tight spot. They've got some exposures to Centro, for instance.
Right.
So it's that type of thing. It's New Zealand. It's the specific corporates where they're in there. You know, and Shamira Capital, they're now up, I think they've written off around $80 million or made a provision for about $80 million. Plus they've done an overall general provision where they're basically saying, because the overall economy is
bad,
we're going to do another couple of hundred million on general provisions. Plus they've done specific provisions, plus there's New Zealand. So it's sort of just a few things across the board. So I must say, Wayne Swan was talking out of his ear yesterday when he came out after the ANZ press conference and said they've made a few bad investments a few years ago. I mean, that was talking about NAB. NAB made a very bad investment in the US mortgage market, which was done a few years ago, which is now hurting them. ANZ, it's just a traditional, ordinary, garden variety banking problem of the economy's deteriorating and your bad debts are rising. And that's the great fear that if that happens across the board, i.e., for instance, what if Australian house prices fall by 20%? What if more businesses hit the wall? What if Centro can't pay back their $16 billion debt? Then you'll see more write-offs. And ANZ's share price has halved since last November. I put $3,000 into them today. I reckon they're a buy at $15.50. A lot of other people are saying they could go to 10 or 12 and that our big four banks are still worth $160 billion and they could go down to $100 billion.
So how long then? Because this has flow-on effect for what everyone's talking today about the superannuation gap, and we're all struggling with what we were earning or what we were making with our superannuation 2 years ago or 1 year ago compared to now in the last 10 years. So where might it end?
Well, crystal ball. I mean, the stock market's down almost 30% from its peak. It's still massively up from its low of March 2003 of 2,700, so it's still almost doubled that level. Super's just had negative 6.4% on average for the year, which is the worst since 1992. My sort of approach is it's already fallen 30%. That's 30%. It can't fall again. And amidst all the fear, and there's a lot of fear out there, amidst all the fear, it's often a good time to buy. I'm not telling your listeners to go out there and mortgage the house. But I my personal view is it's a little bit overdone. And when the market's under, when the All Ords is under 5,000, and you are seeing companies that have, you know, big banks that have halved in value, that they're not a bad buy. I mean, I bought some Mirvac 2 weeks ago at $1.90 and sold them at $2.47. I just said, look, that's crazy, $1.90. So there's a, you know, but then again, so much fear, and this global credit crisis is so unprecedented. And, you know, you literally do have the prospect of the American government with its $500 billion surplus and its attempt to bail out half of the US mortgage market. I mean, that's really spooky. So I mean, something really bad could happen to, the overall American financial system, which could, make the situation a whole lot worse.
Just going on to Qantas, and I had an interesting text message that simply said, do you think Qantas would be going today if the sale to private interests last year had gone ahead? They're saying they would now be bankrupt and out of business because of the credit crunch, et cetera, resulting from the subprime meltdown in the USA would have had an impact on that. What are your thoughts?
Look, it's an interesting question. I actually had lunch a couple of weeks ago with one of the guys who was going to be sitting on the private equity board if they'd bought Qantas. And he made the comment that the profit for this financial year was going to be substantially more. So Qantas was going to make $1.4 billion, which was substantially more than private equity was budgeting to make. So they would have been $200 or $300 million in front on the first year, but then the profit in the current financial year will be substantially below their budget. And he used the phrase that, look, we would be having a few sleepless nights. And he also used the phrase that we'd be getting blamed for everything. Mm. So can you imagine if private equity owned Qantas
right
when the Manila incident happened? We'd all be going, oh, private equity.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they would be Orco Finance Group and Orco Equity Partners, who are going to be, I think, 35% of the equity. Orco Finance Group looks like it's going broke anyway. And they had 10% of it. So you would have had a big blow up with Orco. I think Macquarie Bank would have been fine. They had 10 or 12%. They'd have been fine. Texas Pacific, the world's biggest private equity firm. I mean, they're in Meijer. They're in everything. They're the world's biggest private equity firm. They would have been okay. And you probably would have had the situation of Jeff Dixon and his management team would have been a bit further away from their $300 million windfall than they'd been hoping for when they signed up with private equity, because they had to double the value of the business to make $300 million. And the value of the business has gone down by 30% since the deal fell over. So Dicko would have been working well into his 70s to try and get his 50, 60 or whatever the windfall was for him. But he would have been having a few sleepless nights,
and
to quote his...
Well, just on talking of Jeff Dixon, just a quick comment about yesterday's announcement with Alan Joyce coming in. And was that... I mean, as far as I'm aware, Jeff Dixon was only sort of mooted that he'd be leaving not very long ago.
Well, just after the private equity bid fell over, the former chairman of Qantas, Margaret Jackson, said that he'd be staying on till at least June 2009. And only 11 days ago, Jeff Dixon had a press conference himself where he was announcing 1,500 redundancies and said that he expected to be remaining until February 2009. So the question is, was he one of the 1,500 redundancies? Has the new chairman, Lee Clifford, come in and said, I want my new guy? And I think there might be an element of his departure being brought forward. But a lot of people were surprised that the 42-year-old Irishman is now in charge of Australia's most iconic brand. One, I guess he's probably the youngest CEO of a big 50 company I can remember. No Irish airline can buy Qantas, but we can bring in an Irish man to run it. And a lot of people have been saying today, cripes, if the way Jetstar's run is a good job, well, heaven help what happens to Qantas. So other people say, though, he's a very personable, lovely Irish chap, and he'll do a great job. So we'll see.
Right. It's beautifully set on the fence. But as you say, we'll have to wait and see. Hello, Derek.
Lindy, and that's a very fine Irish accent I noticed there.
It's not bad, was it?
Much better than mine. No. Well, can I get you to do all that?
Any time you need an Irish accent, I'll give you probably Alan's phone number. Really.
Most people have a particular accent that whatever they try and do, anybody's accent, they actually end up sounding like... mine's Indian. No matter what accent I try and do, I always end up sounding like an Indian person. But
There's a similarity between when you're trying them to imitate them, between the Welsh accent and the Indian accent sufficiently to flow like cream from one to the other.
I've got a theory that Irish comedians have it made, because if you read something in English, Coffee mega chain Starbucks has refused to hose down speculation that managers of Australian stores will be told that a meeting today of plans to close.
That sounds serious, yes.
But we get Irish in. To be sure, coffee mega chain Starbucks has refused to hose down speculation that managers of Australian stores will be told in a meeting at 4 p.m. today of plans to close outlets. See? You're laughing.
I
it's
am.
Straight away.
Only
it's
because
funny.
You started it with to be sure, which wasn't on the press release.
That was always in mind, right?
It was. Oh, gee, harsh.
Yeah, so you need to sit there quietly.
It was more Isle of Skye, really. It was halfway between Skye.
It was nearly Indian, actually.
It's a tiny bit of Indian. Yeah.
Derek.
It's 2 minutes to six. Look, now tonight.
Carry on.
Did you enjoy PE when you were at school?
Of course I did.
Yes.
Oh, no, I did.
Stephen, did you?
What's PE? Private equity.
I love my PE. My case. You loved your PE?
Yeah.
Brad,
favourite subject.
Did you enjoy
I was fat and wore glasses. What do you think?
Hey, snap. I didn't enjoy PE.
Yeah.
A survey has just been undertaken. I think it was through the schools directly, something like that anyway. Not that it's important who did it. Apparently 46% of parents say competitive sport at school should be optional. 6% of parents said it shouldn't be included at all.
It didn't have to be competitive.
We have a responsibility. That's what I was going to say. We have a responsibility to our kids to help them stay fit and healthy and live longer and so forth. So what sort of sport should we be doing in schools?
Good. Good.
And what are your memories of PE for you? I've got some rippers for me.
Mine's trampolining in an awful way. Oh. Brad, traffic.
Yes, Flemington Road's crawling, as is Elliott Avenue. Racecourse Road around the cemetery, Eastern, is heavy at the Springvale Road end and having a rough trot from Chandler into Hoddle Street. Waterdale Road is absolutely chockers, according to a couple of people coming out of La Trobe Uni. The Frankston bottleneck is very heavy off Eastlink, and a couple of issues tow truck-wise. Melbourne Road and Elgin Road in Rye, Brighton at Centre Road and Hampton Street, Preston at Murray Road and Plenty Road, and Parkville at MacArthur Road and Elliott Avenue, all of those causing tailbacks and delays.
Quick SMS going back to talking about smog in Beijing. Smog, what smog? A friend from Brisbane was in China on business last week, said he still got the very bad effects from the pollution in both Shanghai and Beijing. Sounded like he was suffocating when I was talking to him. It won't be good. Coming up to the news, it's 6 o'clock.